Welcome to the Bards FM podcast. This is Scott Kesterson, and tonight you're listening to Fourth Pillar, Right Work. This war is real. Fighting is everything. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Tempt not the righteous man to draw his sword. Conviction, righteousness, ruthlessness. To understand tolerance, you have to understand the line of intolerance. War is the teacher, soldiers are the students. They become the bards of war.
Good evening, patriots. Well, we are day by day watching these filthy, nasty communists starting to waver and kind of fall apart more and more, which I can't tell you. I do find certain joy in that. We still have to have a mass extinction event of them to make it really work right, but I think the jab will take care of that. And they're dumb enough to take it, most of them anyway, so that won't be a problem. A couple things off the top. Obviously, Expedition Coffee comes to mind right away. XPED, Expedition Coffee. It is a healthy coffee. It is a coffee with caffeine, but it is designed to boost your immune system, and it is a great product. Me, Mr. Coffee Drinker, and I have been a big-time coffee drinker in my life. It was common for me to have like 4 quad shots a day. I'm down to 1 cup a day in the morning. It's fantastic, and it carries me all day, which is really unusual. You don't get the peaks and the valleys that you get with a caffeine high. It just stays steady, good energy boost, and solid for your immune system. Now you can go to bardsfm.com/coffee, and you can check it out there and click on the links there, or you can go right to Expedition, XPEDITION, expeditioncoffee.com, and you can purchase it there. There's 30 servings per container, and I will, as I've said before, it's an instant. So I was super skeptical. I was like, man, I don't drink instant. I'm like the roast it yourself, grind it yourself. And I have to tell you, it's a great coffee. It really is. So I have that now. I'm down to 1 cup a day in the morning, and that kicks my day off and it carries me all day. So encourage you to check it out. And part of that assembly of products is coming in the next couple of weeks. I've been promising it. The guys at the lab are now at a conference, but as soon as they get back, we're going to be introducing 3 more products that are part of the health triad that go along with the coffee. So this is kind of the foundation. It's just a great product. And I know that Dr. Naputi, I've told you, Dr. Naputi has developed this product line, and it's really good in this current climate of crazy trying to kill us environment. And without me saying much more, I will just tell you that, because, you know, the FTC doesn't like us telling them that you can defeat their nastiness. But this whole product line, with the coffee being the base, is a critical component in maintaining and in building your health beyond their nonsense. Also, My Pillow, Mike Lindell. You know, I don't know if many of you know this. This is, I'm always, as they're willing to have me, I'm going to promote My Pillow. And I'm going to promote My Pillow just for everything that Mike Lindell does. So I'll give you an example of him, of what he did. So after Bard's Fest, he went to the Missouri meeting with Eric Schmidt, which is a district attorney general, and a bunch of the county commissioners, including Joe Basil, or Brazel. If you were there at Bard's Fest, you heard him speak. Great guy. He has been a Marine in his past. Marines are never stopped being a Marine, but he's a fighter. He's a statesman, not a county commissioner. Well, anyway, they brought together a whole bunch of people, and they agreed to do an audit, but the first step in an audit is what's called canvassing, and they were going to canvass 2 or 4 counties. I don't remember what it was. Dr. Frank presented all of his theories to everybody, and anyway, so Eric Schmidt got up there to talk to everybody. It's like, okay, we've agreed to do canvassing. Now we're going to have to fund it, and so he kind of looked over and talked to Dr. Frank. He said, how much do you think that's going to cost? And they said $20 million. And Eric Schmidt said, okay, you guys are going to have to come together to find the money. And Mike Lindell sat at that meeting. This is Saturday when we were at Bard's Fest. And he said, I'll pay for it. He wrote him a check for $20 million. And Dr. Frank already had all of the canvassers ready to go. And right now, I confirmed with Dr. Naputi tonight that the canvassing is in process. So, Patriots, if you ever wonder why I push MyPillow products, besides the fact it's a great company, an amazing CEO, has Christ in his heart, and has built, and if we had 300 CEOs like him, we would never, never have a problem in this nation. And the fact that he went out of his way to fly down to Bard's Fest and present. And then he was there from 6 p.m. until midnight, shaking people's hands and doing interviews. It is also because he is one of these people that continues to give his wealth to the saving of this nation. So, I mean, I buy his products all the time. I push it because I believe in what they do. They're great products. They have great sales going on right now. The towel set, which was $109.99 regularly, now $39.99. Use your promo code BARDS, B-A-R-D-S, B-A-R-D-S. And they've got Giza sheets on sale. They've got, the sheets are amazing. The towels are amazing. The pillows are amazing. People tell me the sleepwear, the pajamas and stuff are great. The slippers are amazing. The comforter is amazing. I mean, every product I've had from them, I've been nothing more than impressed. And their customer service is off the charts. And if you feel like talking to some individual, a human being, then call 800-975-2939, 800-975-2939, and get yourself a real live Patriot counselor. And then you'll be able to get advice on how you won't ever have to go to a sleep therapist again and just buy a good product and sleep well. So a couple other little announcements tonight before we kick off, and we're going to talk about a little bit about the audit, and then we're going to dig into this whole pillar of right work. You all know our in-house mod. We love him to death, Bear. Now, I bet you don't know that he just launched a t-shirt site. So I'm going to put this up. I'm going to read it out. But it's called ambitiousfaith.net. And ambitiousfaith.net. I'd encourage you all. These are his designs. I love it. I'd encourage you all to go on over and support him. You know, all these things are about supporting patriots and small patriot companies. And I think I just saw that Brian Kahanek is in the house tonight. And if you will look at every one of my podcasts for like the last 6 weeks, you will notice at the bottom that there is a link to his site so you can get his album, which he did for Bard's Fest, Coming Home. So there's two great in-house patriots that you can support. Our great mod Bear, who has ambitiousfaith.net, ambitiousfaith.net, and Brian Kahanek. So, I think it's briankahanek.com. I know the mods will put it up for me in a minute. But just check out his album. It's super cool. Brian's super talented, if you didn't know. So is his wife, Jill. And if y'all didn't know, they closed Bard's Fest for us with amazing music. We're blessed. Blessed to have that sort of talent on the Patriot side. So, anyway, go ahead and rock that for a little bit. You know, we need to, this is a lot of what we're going to talk about tonight anyway, about right work, about making the choices to apply our choices of work and choices of income in the right way as we face this evil cabal. And as I've told you, there's going to be some real expansions on the Bard's store in the coming weeks. And we've also launched the development now of a Bard's Base Camp, which I promised last spring, but it just with Bard's Fest, it got to be too much. But the Bard's Base Camp has now started, and it's going to have its own live chat, live streaming podcast, and live chat, and all the podcasts will be hosted there, as well as we're going to be working very closely in the coming weeks with Clout Hub, which I'll talk about in a minute. But the Bard's Base Camp is now being developed. It's probably 2 to 4 weeks out for its first phase, and we'll integrate a lot of stuff in that. So it's good stuff. Exciting times. Okay, so right work. And this is a philosophical concept to begin with, that we have to make choices in our life And we do make choices in our life and how we're going to use our gifts and talents. Unfortunately, too many of us get swept up with the ideas of college and degrees and job titles and salary levels, and we don't follow the passions that live within us. So my own story on this is that when I went to university, I bounced around and all sorts of stuff. Interestingly, that when I was about 14 years old, I got introduced to photography by a local photojournalist in my hometown, and he gave me my first camera and then later gave me my first enlarger. And I fell in love with photography early on. In particular, I fell in love with combat photography because I had grown up in my time with the images of Vietnam on the nightly news, and I was always enamored with what those combat photographers were doing. They were literally like doing incredible things. Now, I also grew up in a family where my father was a remodeling contractor, so I was exposed to a lot of trade craft is a CIA term. Trades and the crafts and the skills that go with that. And so as I kind of rambled through my college and university, I tried to put all these pieces together, and nothing really came together until I finally got my degree in history, which, by the way, was probably the greatest degree I could have ever have received. Never thought it would be until now. Because what was my focus? Revolution and change. Isn't that crazy? But anyway, part of that is even at that point, I did listen to kind of those intuitive pieces that God puts within you and finding your interests. And that's very important. But I didn't have any idea what I was going to do with a history degree. But I'm super glad that I followed that passion. So I bounced around. I became a national director of marketing. I did a lot of stuff in the 90s. And then in the early 2000s, I moved back. At the beginning of 2000, I moved back to Oregon and I took over my dad's business. And I started remodeling contracting and doing some high-level custom work in Portland. I built a really nice business in Portland. And I did that for about 5 years. And I built a small business up there. Now, at this point, that was about my fourth business I had started. And it's pretty easy for me because I hated working in corporate environments. I didn't like the idea of having to sell my soul to a corporate architecture and not have the space to create and to innovate what was within me. And having grown up with a father who proved that, who was constantly fighting the system and surviving well against all odds and doing what he loved, those were really good examples for me to follow. And it's a lot of what I refer to constantly as right work, is getting to the place and doing those things that God leads us to, that has our gifts and talents and brings so much together. I've done a lot of things, obviously, in my life, and I can honestly say that everything I've taken on, I've accomplished very successfully. In my work in Portland, when I started my business, I had about $1,200 capital, which is enough to buy tools, and then I ended up having a Volvo, and I had all my tools in the Volvo, and I got a roof rack to carry my ladders around, and it took me about 6 months, and I got my first major job, and I was able to buy a van. And then I just funded the business that way, all the way through. And so it was a matter of, I've always kind of been this principle where I don't like taking heavy leverage capital to start a business. I don't believe in that. I believe that if we follow our passions and we start small and efficient, we can build out from there and many things will flow. And that's proven true with most of my life. And so that went to where about 2005, it was actually early 2006, I turned 40 and I had one of those major midlife crises. I'd had a kind of a rough last 6 months of my prior business with some really stupid customers. And it forced me to do some deep reflection on what was I really wanting to do in my life. And the one thing I can tell you that has been consistent across up to that point was I was always engaged in amateur photography. So I started studying photography again on the side. So I'd work my business during the day and then I'd go to the dark room or go on the street. I'd shoot a lot of stuff on Portland streets through 2006. And I linked up with a Pulitzer Prize combat photographer out of Dallas that mentored me by distance and did a great job. And so in This was 2005. So at the end of 2005, I'm a year off. At the end of 2005, I decided just to take a risk, and I called the Oregon Army National Guard, and I said, hey, this is Scott Kesterson. I used to be in the Guard, and I was talking to Major Brabish, who was a public affairs officer, and I can hear him typing, and he goes, well, welcome back, Lieutenant Kesterson. He says, glad to have you. What can I do for you? So, well, I'm just kind of curious. I said, I'm just a kind of a new burgeoning photographer, and I want to know what it would take to get embedded to go overseas. And this was literally his answer, which was unbelievable. He said, do you want to go to Iraq or do you want to go to Afghanistan? And then he goes on to say, he goes, Iraq, we're just about done with. So there's only like three months. But if you choose Afghanistan, we can send you over there for 15 months. And I'm not kidding you, it took me 30 seconds. And I said, I'll go to Afghanistan. She said, okay, I'll get you the paperwork. Now, this is incredible because this doesn't happen that way, just so you know. Typically, embeds are a very difficult thing to get. It's a very laborious process. You have to be working with an agency, like NBC, CBS, ABC, some sort of major affiliate. And I was working with no one. It was my own stuff. But I happened to have a connection to the Dallas Morning News, which was part of Belo Corporation, which also owned Portland News Station, KGW. And Rod Gramer got a call from the president of Dallas Morning News and said, hey, I want you to meet this guy. So I went over and I met Rod Gramer, who was a great guy. He was the TV station manager for KGW in Portland. And he said, we'd love to host your blog if you'd like that. And he said, we'll write you a letter and said, we're hosting your blog. And that's all it took. And I submitted that. And the next thing I know is 2 months later, I flew out to Camp Shelby and I was there for my first stint in Afghanistan for 15 months. Now, that led, so when I got back, I'd never done this before. But this was purely my passion, and I was just totally living it. And I was also doing for the first time high-definition video as my main way of, this was early on. HD video is no big deal today. It was a big deal in 2006. And so I shot all my stuff in 1440 by 1080 HD video, which is kind of the early format. And I was using a small camera called a Sony A1U, and it used cassettes, cassette tapes. They were small HD video cassette tapes. And I shot that. I went through four cameras, by the way, that year. I ruined four of them. And caught the first footage of the Canadians in combat in July. Was in my first major conflict, meaning like gunfight, in June. And then did this whole story through the year. Published 130 written stories. Did something like 30 video stories and like 10 or 20 audio stories. And so at the end of that year, this is what that result was. So when I arrived back in May, in June, I was awarded an Emmy for best photography. And I was submitted for a Peabody, which was unbelievable because there was only 1,200 people in the nation that were even accepted into the Peabody Award. So my point of all that is that wasn't just me, okay? That's not me bragging. That's God moving through me in the gift and talents that he gave me. And because I opened it up and took the risk, not because of money, key thing here, but because it was the right direction to go, the doors flew open. And that's the big, and you have to be willing to take these risks. Now, I will tell you that in the coming year, it was a rough year. I mean, I was literally sleeping on couches and house sitting for people, had almost little money at all. And then it took about a year, and then I got my next big break. And all these things led to places, right? So my next big break is I got an opportunity to go back over to Afghanistan to work on another film, and I was paid pretty well to do it. And that led to me getting connected with some guys that were and worked with the CIA that later led to me being brought on board of the CIA team that led me to work with the Joint Special Operations teams. So a lot of things happened, okay? But part of this process for me as I look back, it was all part of God's plan because so much of that was moving me through a course of events that was enriching my skills, even when I didn't think it was. And I moved far afield, far afield from photography. I went from photography to literally doing cultural intelligence, training special forces teams on how to do certain things and building a small defense company. I mean, everything was, I starts in documentary and ends up way over on the other side. But the one constant thing that was there was storytelling. And that led to ultimately where I am today, which is ironically, I'm coming back to photography again. So that's a long story, but that's coming in the next couple of years. There's going to be more films and there's going to be more innovation, things like that with photography. But that's all kind of, it's just an exciting part of this. And it's what I call right work, because right work, sometimes for some people, right work is one thing. Like there's these guys in Missouri and they run what's called, they build bows, recurves and traditional bows. And their company is Black Widow Bows. I just ordered a bow from them. They're incredible. I mean, that's all they do. And their bows are legendary. And I have so much respect for these guys. Because everything, it's 6 months, by the way, to get one bow. And they do it right. And that's what they do. So there's those types of pathways that we walk where you do one thing and you do what you do. And that's it. Meaning like their line is bows. There's kind of my pathway, which is storytelling, which encompasses a lot of things. And I've become a podcaster. I've learned to become a young but burgeoning engineer, audio engineer. I've learned to do documentary films, the complete process from filming to production to delivery. I mean, that's the gambit of that, and it's huge. So the biggest thing is, are we dedicating ourselves to those pathways that God opens up? And that's right work. The problem is when we work with corporate environments, we aren't maximizing what we're doing. And you can tell yourself you are, because it's like, oh, it's such a good opportunity. But I guarantee you, when you talk about a great opportunity, somewhere in there is this number, like my salary, my benefits. Right work has nothing to do with that. It doesn't mean God isn't going to reward you. But it means the difference is that when you're in right work, you're taking the leap to trust in God, to follow the paths of the gifts and talents that sit within you. And that's the key here. In my case, I have a 4-year degree at Oregon State University. I started my master's at University of Oregon and got so fed up after the first of the year. Actually, I almost got kicked out because I challenged the dean of the department and I was right. And he was so mad, he wanted to kick me out. That was kind of an epic moment, but that's okay. Not like you would expect me not to do that, right? But the whole point is that you don't have to be defined by a degree. You don't have to be defined by anything other than your passions. One of the greatest pieces of advice that was given to me long before I jumped into photography, I was working as national director of marketing and we had hired a set photographer, a really good one. And so I offered myself to be his grip, which means his kind of gopher, for the 3 or 4 days that he was on the site. And I got to really see how a set photographer works. I mean, this guy was good and really understood how to draw people into a photo and the steps that he took to each step, look at the details so that the photos became of interest. They were catalog photos, but photos became of interest. And I was talking to him at the time, this is like mid-90s, and I was like, you know, I'm considering maybe going back to school to get my degree in photography. He goes, don't waste your time on the degree. And remember, these were great words. He said, take the same money you'd spend on a degree, spend it on camera equipment, and shoot like hell. He said, just shoot, 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 and you'll learn to be a good photographer. Well, there's a lot of truth to that, as long as you're trying to excel to excellence, right? Every single thing we do. I talked last night about Patriot Gardens. To be a good gardener, it takes about 5 years. And it takes a dedication in your life to be constant at it. It's not like it's in some way, it's a little bit every day. And that's a lot of what where right work comes from, is that once you start on something, you can start on it part-time, quarter-time, whatever. And it can be a side hobby. But if you really want to take a leap and you want to push that in there, and that's what you're drawn to and your passions, you can make anything work. What you can't be driven by is the salary. Because there's just so many, in this day and age, the one thing I will tell you about this market that I've learned very well is there's so many incredible opportunities and ways to create income flow. It's just, it's amazing. It's absolutely stunning, in fact. And the more that you pursue your right work, the more those opportunities evolve. Whether maybe you're going to end up doing some online seminars, maybe you're going to produce a newsletter. Maybe you develop a product store. Maybe you're just selling the products you want. But you can move beyond just your own personal abilities. And really, when we start to look at this expansion of passion, and what you're sharing really is your story when we get into social media. And that's an important part of anything in right work, is what's your story? What's your narrative? What are you trying to accomplish? What are you trying to do? What's driving you? Now, it's... when you're sitting in a salary job and it's making your monthly bills, and we're in a period of time right now when you were being forced to face compliance with an injection, this is something, if you were following me on Twitter and even in my podcast, over a year ago, I was telling people, get out of these corporate jobs. Start preparing to make a move. Because I could see the writing on the wall. It's pretty obvious. The corporate was going to start crushing down on people and forcing them to comply, take the injection, or lose their job. And that's just the problem with corporate, is that in these corporate architectures, the idea is to force people to comply to their will. And it doesn't work well. I mean, if you think that your passion is going to continue, you're very wrong. It's actually destroying it. So let me give you a few stats on businesses that I think are interesting. The Small Business Administration defines a small business as a firm with fewer than 500 employees. That's not a small business, by the way. That's a Small Business Administration small business. A small business that we're talking about is 1 to 10 employees. That's a real small business. They actually refer to that as a micro business, but whatever. What's interesting is there are 30.2 million small businesses in the United States. That's incredible. And I'll bet you what you also didn't know is that those small businesses account for 99.7% of all business in the U.S. And micro businesses, which is what I referred to a minute ago, account for 75.3% of all private sector employees. So micro businesses are typically fewer than 10 people. Okay? So imagine that. 75.3% of all private and sector employees work for a micro business, a business of 10 people or less. That's just amazing. Now, the couple things about small business, you work a lot of hours. So 19% of all small business owners, they say, work over 60 hours. Yeah, I'm going to tell you it's more like about 80%, maybe 90%. But what's real interesting is 50% of all small businesses are operated from home. The biggest thing is, if you're used to going to corporate world or working over big overheads, when you start to follow a right work issue, you have to scale back. The biggest problem corporate does is it kind of shows you the big glimmer of what high budget, high investment results in. But when you're starting a small business, you don't have to have any of that. You can start it from a little office space in your house. Depending on what you're going to do, you can be a consultant, you can be a writer. There's just unlimited number of things you can do, right? The biggest thing is to follow the gifts and talents that you do. You can have a small little wood shop and be making stuff on the side. You can be throwing clay. And you've met Jennifer Renee Anderson through the interviews here, and you saw her at Bard's Fest, hopefully, who made all the pots. I mean, there's an example of somebody who took the leap, left her job when she was working as a bartender and followed her true passion. And now she's making her living doing what she was intended to do, which is throwing clay and being a raku artist, right? These are the powerful things that when we do those things and we follow that, we're following the gifts that God gave us, and there's rewards with that. And so much of what we're faced with right now is we have to come face to face with that. When I look at the world and how it's falling apart, what I'm really seeing is I'm seeing that everybody is being made to confront a choice. Follow the salary or follow your passions. Follow the obedience to the system or follow God's path. It's really that simple. And for some of those decisions, it's very difficult. Some people want to do something, like a pilot may, well, that's all I want to do is fly. Well, that's okay. But you're going to have to make a decision now. Are you going to fly for them, or are you going to have to take a risk and step away and let God guide you on your passion and not be vaxxed? That's much of what's happening. And part of that clarification that's happening is we're creating an army of people that as they step away are now finding new ways to make a living and looking at the economy differently and looking at how making a living can be done differently. You know, so much of the problem with the world that we were in is that it's, when you talk about salaries and two incomes in a household and all this, most of that's driven by the fact that there's massive debt in a house, in a household. So it's the car, the credit cards, the mortgage, all these things add up and they keep everybody enslaved, and you aren't going to get away from that to be able to run your own business right away. But at a certain point, you have to make that decision. And maybe it means selling the house and going to something smaller that you can afford. Maybe it means selling off the cars and buying used. I'm really not kidding. I mean, you have to make some bold decisions. And it sounds, I say this as if it was easy. It's not an easy decision. I understand that. But you have to make the decisions in your life of what you're living for. And that's what right work is ultimately about. Is doing the things that you know that God wants you to do and paying attention to that and not just doing whatever to make just a bunch of money. And when we extend that impact of right work, what we're also doing is we're extending our responsibility and stewardship of the dollars that we earn. You know, I spend, every time I go to buy something, I spend an unbelievable amount of time always trying to find Made in America. And it's not easy. And certain things you just discover after a while, you're like, yeah, forget that. That's not even going to be found. And it isn't. I'll give you an example. LED lighting. There's for my Jeep, I wanted to get new LED lights. There's one company in the United States that assembles the lights. They're called Baja. They assemble the lights, but the LED components all come from China. You can't avoid it because nobody in the States makes the components. But at least the casings and there and the assembly is that, okay? There's other examples like LED lighting for photography. You're not going to find an American-made light because the LEDs, again, aren't made here. So there are certain components, electronics, so you kind of have to go through this process where you always want to look for an American small business first, in my opinion. This was, I always look for that, like Carson Shoes out of Portland. Which, oh, by the way, he's asked for a design from Bard. So I think we're going to send him a design for a custom Carson Shoes. I love that guy. He is so cool. I love his company philosophy. I like what he fights for. I have two pairs of his shoes, Carson Shoes, the best ever. Super comfortable. But he's a small manufacturer. He's about got slaughtered by this COVID nonsense and all the lazy butt people that wanted to take their unemployment instead of work. And he's revived his business and through his faith has got himself back up again. He's doing great. And so he's a fighter, but he's a small shoe manufacturer that's going up against Nike. He's the only truly American made shoe. And it might take you 6 months to get a pair. Who cares? They're worth every bit of it. Right? Or you can go to a larger company like Danner, which ironically is owned by a Japanese firm, but they're an American manufactured boot and they're incredibly good shoes. I've had them for years. All right. So all these things I'm getting at is you have to stewardship. Right work is also how we use our income to support those businesses with the right values. And as we work and build our own businesses, then we also can look for opportunities to work with other businesses of the right values. And what we're doing in the process here is actually very radical. And I've said this now for a couple of shows, and I'm really trying to get people to understand that the county by county model that's being presented here each night, the seven pillars, are literally a revolution. It just doesn't need guns. This revolution is gutting corporate America if we execute it right. And if each home follows this model to one extent or the other, the more we push into this county by county kind of sovereign home model, you're going to find the corporate's going to be on its knees begging you to come back. And you can just tell them no and watch them die because they deserve every bit of that. But right work is following our passions and our talents to build something. And it's something that you own and you build, and you can very proudly say, this is mine. I did this. And that's all through God. I mean, that's when I say it's mine. It's like, this is God's gift to me to manage and to steward, right? And then you get into that next level, which is now that income that you use. You want to use that in a way that supports others of the same. So you make very wise business decisions, looking at those that are not part of big corporate. You start looking at the smaller operator, the smaller business, those that are have great products but aren't necessarily easy to get. All of these things, when you start to work them together, they start to build this fantastic economic ecosystem, which is built around smaller businesses, which in themselves employ a lot of people. Because a small business that begins with one, if it grows, you'll usually hire somebody part-time, or you'll hire maybe a couple of people, and you can grow that business. I mean, here's another statistic for you. Small businesses employ 59 people in the United States, right? So another interesting statistic, 64% of small business owners begin with only $10,000 in capital, and micro businesses can get off the ground with just $3,000 in capital. It doesn't take much in capital. And what may seem inordinate, I mean, depending on where you're at, maybe $3,000 is a lot of money. I don't want to minimize that because it's a good chunk of money. But when we're talking about starting a business, you're not having to talk about getting, you know, $20,000, $50,000, $100,000 in leveraged capital. Depending on what you're doing, you can start it for near nothing, if depending on what you have, especially if it's an internet-based business and if you're smart about it, right? Now, here's another example. There's a company in L.A. They're called Printful. Printful. You can start a digital store. If you have a website, and with probably $100 or $200 a month just for some, like a WooCommerce plugin or something like that, you can start your own product line through them. There is zero cost. If you're doing printed t-shirts and printed stuff, there is zero cost for you to set that up. All you have to do is submit your designs, and then every single order that comes in, then you, if you have, when that money comes in, you can push it to Printful, and they'll do one at a time for you. So it's almost a zero. It's like a near zero cost. We'll say $500 to start your business on a t-shirt business as an example. Right? There's just a lot of these opportunities out there that if you follow them, you can start something. But the biggest part of right work is to follow those passions that you're drawn to, not just to do something. I mean, that's good too, but I mean, not, but you're trying to find those passions that align. So if your passion is to grow a t-shirt company, there's opportunities. If your passion is to be a photographer, then pursue it. If your passion is to be a writer, pursue it. And be creative in this environment. The beautiful thing is we're so globally interconnected that there's so many different ways that you can monetize and to build an income flow. It's really quite impressive, but it takes a lot of work. The one thing I will tell you that I've learned very much in dealing with especially digital space, I will tell you that working in the digital space is the hardest work I've ever done. Hardest that I've ever done. And it's been the most rewarding too. But none of this has ever been designed. I didn't come out of the gate going, I need to make X number of dollars. I just trusted in God to take care of that. And just to push as hard as I can go. And that's the key, is when you're running with that passion in your heart, you just keep going. You just drive as hard as you can. And things begin to open. Doors begin to fly open, especially when you're sincere and true with God. And that's the biggest message on that of the right work. I don't know what your passions are. There's a million different things people can do, right? But, I mean, there's people that restore. I mean, there's guys I've met that restore like old Coke machines, or, you know, and it's something I'm always impressed with. I was not work I would ever be interested in doing. But the biggest thing about right work is it's something that you can do every single day and not ever get bored with it. And even when you're exhausted and tired, that you're still driven to do it, right? And that's part of this sorting out of this clutter that's been put all around us in our life. And that clutter is immense. It really is. That clutter is the noise out here, that it's just this constant noise of what you should be doing, what success looks like, how much money you should make, what type of status symbols you need in your life, what are the idols you should worship. It's all this garbage. But when you clear all that field from your desk and your head, and you get into the focus of what you're driven to and what God has asked, given you the talents to do or is driving you to do, then you're starting to get into the place of right work. And then the biggest piece is to make the step to do it. The one thing I can't stand is people that just talk about like, oh, I'm going to do this someday. Then you're never going to do it. You can talk about it all day long. You're never going to do it. I'm one that jumps. Man, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to go full in on it. I'm going to commit to it financially. I'm going to commit to it emotionally, spiritually, and then I'm going to go full in when I make that decision. And when I make that decision, it's going to go 100% in, and I'm going to push, and I'm going to try to be the best I can be at whatever I take on. That's the only way I know how to live. And I would encourage you to consider that, because I think that's an extremely important perspective on what makes success in business. And I do not rate success, by the way, with what your bank account is. Success to me is, are you happy? Are you able to make your bills? And are you driven to continue doing what you're doing? And are you making an impact that you feel that God would be proud of? When you answer those questions, that's it, right? Follow it and then pursue. And then be prepared that it may shift on you as you go along. You're going to find opportunities that lead you different places, and that's all good. So that's kind of it for right work. And that's what we call the fourth pillar in County by County. I'm going to close out with a couple things here. One I promised at the beginning was just to touch on the Arizona audit today, because it was a big deal. And then I want to close with a little bit on Cloud Hub. So, and County by County. So just so we say it, the Arizona audit came through today. And it was a pretty long thing. And if anybody was expecting it's all going to be revealed and Trump's going to come back, then you weren't paying attention. You're being a fool to think that way. The audit presented the facts today. And what they found were some pretty big things. And I'm going to use Truth Hammer's review of this, very quick bullets that he did today on Telegram. The AZ audit proved numerous state laws were not followed. Obstruction occurred to prevent a full audit. It was impossible to certify the election. The Attorney General Brnovich now has political cover to seize everything Maricopa refused to provide, conduct a criminal investigation on numerous matters. The Senate now has political cover to issue several findings of facts recognizing the election was illegally certified, recall the electors for Biden. What they can't do is to decertify, because they didn't prove in this audit that Trump didn't win or Trump should have won. So that's just something to keep in mind. What this is doing is it's unraveling. This is all about the slow destruction of this cabal. And most of that, again, is driven towards us as we the people. Said this all along. We're the solution. Okay? We are the solution. It's not going to be the Calvary. We're going to be the solution. And the solution is for us to be constantly pushing as we do. From my angle, like the biggest thrust that I'm going to contribute, and I'm hoping to contribute and motivate in this fight, is to help this organization of county by county take legs and take power. Because as we assume the sovereign status of our homes and we build that sovereignty model around our lives, we're going to be able to continue to erode the foundations of this corporate tyranny and watch it burn to the ground, which I'm very happy to encourage any day of the week. Okay. So there's already calls for decertification. There's calls for a 50 statewide audit by a number of legislatures. This is good. And so the Arizona audit has shown a truth to the public that many didn't want to believe, that, yep, it was a corrupt election, unbelievably corrupt. Now, as a kind of final note, county by county is very passionate to me. My approach is bottom up. You have a lot of people working from a top-down model, meaning they're looking at a county from all of the political offices and places they want to change offices and change positions and get the corruption out. And that is important to do. But I truly feel, and this comes from my own experience, that you're not going to change a culture until people change the lifestyles in which they live. It just isn't going to happen. So if you want to modernize, as an example, one of the projects I had in my, what would be a similar type, it was village by village, but this is county by county in Afghanistan. If we wanted to change the villages, we had to get the villages to talk to one another, because most Afghan villages don't talk to one another. And so that's where getting localized internet was really important, because we could build sites to encourage communication through story from one village to the other. And then that would allow a linkage as we focused on the household, which I did exactly that in Afghanistan. The things that I looked at in Afghanistan were improving heat and efficiency of fuel, health in the home, hygiene in the home, preserving food, improving farming methods. These were kind of key aspects that we focused on, because they're a very rural society. Here we have seven pillars, right? Our seven pillars are home churches, homeschooling, patriot gardens, right work, health and wellness, informed action, stewardship and conservation. And so we have health and wellness, stewardship and conservation, and informed action all next week. All of these pillars, when you put them together and you start to take household by household, and households start to work together, which is all that's at the core of this, is bringing and building local communities so that we're focused locally. We're buying locally, supporting locally, distributing locally, and we're breaking the control and dependence upon these corporate models. We're redefining the foundation and infrastructure of the way the United States works. And we're breaking our dependence upon integrated and massive supply chains and changing our relationship to where we aren't working for money, but we're working for greater things. Our work is tied to right work, our relationship with God, as we build out a bigger community network. So to facilitate that even more, and I mentioned this at Bard's Fest, and I got off the phone today with Greg, who's one of the developers over at Clout Hub, and we're going to be, in the next couple of weeks, we're going to start rolling this seven-pillar program out into formalized county by county and migrating the great work that our mods have done over on Telegram. We're going to be moving it into Clout Hub. And the beauty of the way the Clout Hub is organized now is we can start creating a national, state, and county-level administrators, so that we can start bringing counties and creating localized county cells that can link to at a state level and link to a national level. And with the tools on Clout Hub, we're going to be able to do some really awesome things, like one of the processes they have, which is called Meetings, which is a replacement, it's a new American-made way more better. That's not even a term. I like that, more better. Got that. Than Zoom capability. And with that, we're going to be able to start doing virtual town calls with up to 100,000 people per meeting. And we can link up to five of those meetings. So I'd be happy to see 500,000 people online. So that's going to be the effort that we're really moving towards here in the next, you know, 4 months, 5 months, as we really work aggressively, as because so much of the county by county model is local and is in your home. So it isn't really conducive for us to be drawing you out of your home to go chase a rally or a festival. Instead, we can link, the emphasis needs to be on local linking, especially with the kind of the doom and gloom we're facing here in the next 3 or 4 months, creating the local networks that become very resilient. And even if you get cut, if they decide to black out sections of the internet for whatever reason, you still have that local linkage. You know that, you know, you and this neighbor across the county and maybe another neighbor across on the side of the county, maybe there's three, maybe there's 10, maybe there's 100 of you, but you know that you're linked and you can locally start to link and get together for coffee and build networks. I mean, that's kind of the ultimate idea, is to transition us from digital to real. And building this groundswell from bottom up that starts in your home. I can't emphasize this enough, that as if you take the seven pillars and everybody followed those to the maximum of their ability, you would literally see a transformation in this country in probably 6 months. You'd start to see big warehouses go out of business. You'd start to see like them trying to slash prices. They'd be slashing labor because no one would be buying their stuff. And that's good. That's good because we don't need to have the dependence. I mean, I think, what did I read the other day? Amazon now is composed of 60% Chinese companies. Okay. So, and I still use Amazon for some stuff. There's times I have no choice because they're the only outlet. And here's what it's even more. I've said this before. I always research who's selling on Amazon, where else I can find it, and if I can buy it direct from vendor. And here's the part that always gets me, is that many times I'll go direct to vendor and they're on Amazon and it is their site on Amazon, and I can get it for 20% cheaper on Amazon. There's really no choice. That's, you know, I'm not throwing away 20% just to buy it from their factory when they're selling the same thing through Amazon. So again, these are difficult times and difficult choices, and we just have to continue to migrate with the philosophy of always trying to move away from this cabal. I mentioned Andrew Torba and what he's doing in building the marketplace for the new Christian economy. It's great. We're going to be advertising over there very soon to support that. And then we have that same potential being developed within Clout Hub, which is going to be an exchange opportunity, a money exchange opportunity, to where down the road, as I talked to Greg today, we're going to be able to start creating marketplaces within counties that we can share and search. So there's some great opportunities coming here. And it's just really important to grasp around what these seven pillars are really going to do for us and why it's so important at a home level. And I don't take away anything that anybody else is doing on a county by county. I've told you that. This is just my personal experience. Is this is where we rock the foundations of the nation and we shake it, because once you start to get secure in your home, the counties can't threaten you. The cities can't threaten you. It's your home. It's your independence. You're gaining back your power. That's the most important thing. Okay, let us pray. Heavenly Father, I want to thank you for this time that we've come together to reflect very deeply on the gifts and the talents that you provide us. We pray that the many patriots that are out there will hear that and follow those gifts and talents to seek that path of right work. And in so doing, reestablish themselves with strength and clarity and the courage to be regained in a culture that is constantly trying to put people down and constantly trying to rate us based on how much we make, what our status is, what we drive, what we wear, where we live. We need to return, Lord, to that fundamental concept of where we are, what we are doing is striving to be better connected and deeper connected through you. And through you, we experience and express the glory what you have given us through these gifts and talents that we can transition into right work. So we ask that you'll guide us, Give us eyes to see and ears to hear. Give us that strength and courage to step out and make the effort to do make this true. Don't sit and wait, but to initiate those actions and with your guidance and your clarity. We say these things in Christ Jesus' name. Amen. So, it's an exciting time, you know. Really is. There's a lot of garbage we're dealing with. And, you know, it's like, I've said this, you've heard me say it, I'll say it in many different forms. My patience with the stupid is like at max. And my patience with obedience to tyranny and being a stupid drone, just doing whatever a politician tells people to do, I'm like, I have no tolerance for that. I'm tired of political threats. I'm tired of police threats. I'm tired of school threats. And the only way we're going to break from that is for us to stand strong and be independent and be proud patriots that are Americans that are independent by core nature with that fire in your belly. The rest of them, you know, I just say it this way. Stay off my property. Stay out of my face. Stay out of my way. And that's really where we are, right? And I think that I'm going to see if I can find it. This was one of the great, this is the great quote today. I think this kind of sums up a lot of this. It is to do with the Arizona audit, but I'm going to close with this. And it says, I'm in Arizona just reading this mess. I told you all why it was taking so long. This 2020 election looks like it was conducted by monkeys on PCP and DMT. But even I could not have imagined there would be data sets in the Maricopa voting machines from Washington and South Carolina. That is taking it to another level. So I'll be watching the AG response very closely as I sharpen my axe and measure rope. Pretty much sums it up, right? So that is literally kind of where we all have to get to. We have to get to this intolerance of stupid. And I'm happy to be there with these people literally fall on their knees begging for God. I'll be glad to pray with them and give them the choice to stand up and accept Christ. But I'm not going to placate it anymore. I'm not going to get worked up at whether they take a vax or take their 15th shot or whatever the heck they do. You know, I just like, whatever, man. We've tried to tell you, you're stupid, you don't want to hear. And you keep living in fear. I saw some kid, it was a beautiful sunny day, walking just downtown. He went to Caesars, and Little Caesars, and got a pizza. It was because it was in his hand. And he's walking with a full face diaper on. It was a pretty impressive size face diaper. And talking on the cell phone. I'm like, yeah, you're stupid. You're mentally damaged. I don't even know what to say, you know? I mean, it's just, this is kind of where I'm at. And I, you know, it's like, I've already heard someone say to me, you know, it's like, oh, this doesn't sound very Christian. I'm like, it's very Christian. It's very Christian. I'm there if you're going to be on your knees, but you are so far into that pit of evil. No matter what I tell you, the only thing you want to do is harm my life, try to take away my ability to worship God, and try to take me out of play. So here's my answer. Stay away from my property, stay out of my face, stay out of my lane. Period. End of story. I'll pray for you just because out of grace, I'm going to pray for my enemies because you're my enemy. But at the end of the day, stay off my property, stay out of my way, and get out of my face. And don't threaten. End of story. It's pretty much where I'm at. So patriots, keep your head up and your eyes forward. Never bow to evil. Never relent. Always press into the fight. This is a great time to be alive, man. I tell you. Pretty exciting. Don't get depressed. Whatever you do, pray. If you start to feel the world crushing down on you, pray. God's there. Turn to Christ. Ask him to help lift the burden. That's what we're there for. Like I said the other day, if you're going to read the headlines, you're going to get yourself depressed. If you want to read good news, spend some time with God. There you go, right? Nothing can shake you if you're there. God is with us. He's never, ever going to forsake us unless we're dumb enough to forsake him, which, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, that kind of happens once in a while. Look around. mass diaper vax brains people. They'll come to their senses, a lot of them, when they finally realize what they've done. And the first thing they're going to do is start praying to God. Or they're going to lament and say, why'd you let me do this? Which is typical, but they'll get through that. Like I said, God is with us. He's never going to forsake us. And in the end, God will win. But we have a huge part of that victory because God is working through us. So know that, own that, be proud of that, and never, ever doubt that. That's the best part of this whole part of this time. God's right there. He's like, oh, okay, I'm ready to work with you. You ready? Send me, Lord. Bam, the way you go. So Patriots, have a blessed evening. I'll be back this evening for Fishers of Men. Until then, or until the next time, God bless, and out for now.
We shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
Every thoughtful citizen who despairs of war and wishes to bring peace should begin by looking inward, by examining his own attitude towards the possibilities of peace. Too many of us think it is impossible. Too many think it is unreal. But that is a dangerous, defeatist belief. It leads to the conclusion that war is inevitable, that mankind is doomed, that we are gripped by forces we cannot control. We need not accept that view. Our problems are man-made. Therefore, they can be solved by man. And man can be as big as he wants. No problem of human destiny is beyond human beings. Man's reason and spirit have often solved the seemingly unsolvable, and we believe they can do it again. Surely the opening vistas of space promise high costs and hardships, as well as high reward. So it is not surprising that some would have us stay where we are a little longer, to rest, to wait. But this city of Houston, this state of Texas, this country of the United States was not built by those who waited and rested and wished to look behind them. This country was conquered by those who move forward, and so will space. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept.
The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Thousands of years to show its face. It has only one intent, to destroy God's light and to enslave. It has no scruples. It has no rules but one, to win at any cost. But we will never bow, for we are the remnant that will hold the line. This is war. We fight. We push, we climb, we never give in, we become the nightmare that evil didn't know could exist.
We pray. We stand. We live by the words, "In God we trust." We fear nothing. We are the light that can never be extinguished. We are patriots. We are the digital army that will help deliver God's wrath.